Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My Lord, all obeisances unto You, who are eternal beyond time's limits of past, present and future. You are inconceivable in Your activities. You are the master of the three modes of material nature, and being transcendental to all material qualities, You are free from material contamination. You are the controller of all three of the modes of nature, but at the present You are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto You. Purport by His Divine Grace. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls the material activities manifested by the three modes of material nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Nirgunam Guna Boktricha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always transcendental to the material qualities, Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamogun. But nonetheless, He is their controller. The Lord manifests Himself in three features as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar to control these three qualities. He personally takes charge of Sattvaguna as Lord Vishnu, and He entrusts the charge of Rajagun and Tamogun to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Ultimately, however, He is the controller of all three gunas. Lord Brahma, expressing His appreciation, said that because Lord Vishnu had now taken charge of the activities of goodness, there was every hope that the demigods would be successful in fulfilling their desires. The demigods were harassed by the demons who were infested with tamogun. However, as Lord Brahma has previously described, since the time of Sattvaguna had now arrived, the demigods could naturally expect to fulfill their desires. The demigods are supposedly well advanced in knowledge, yet they could not understand the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is addressed here as Anantaya. Although Lord Brahma knows past, present, and future, He is unable to understand the unlimited knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Demigods Appeal to the Lord for Protection. The verses reads again. Namastubhyam anantaya durvitar kyatma karmane nirgunaya guneshaya sattvastaya trisampartam. My Lord, all obeisances unto You, who are eternal beyond time's limit of past, present and future. You are inconceivable in Your activities. You are the master of the three modes of material nature, and being transcendental to all material qualities, You are free from the material contamination. You are the controller of all the three of the modes of nature, but at the present You are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto You. Oma gyana timirandasya gyananjana shayakarya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha mukham karoti vachalam pangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham bande shri gurun dina taranam. It is very difficult to give class only occasionally. And that's what's happening to me. I haven't given class for a long time. So every time I come and give class, there's a completely different subject. Completely like if I'm opening a new book. So before the class, I had to go a little bit back and forth, a little bit to acquaint myself with the circumstances in which these wonderful prayers are spoken by Lord Brahma. So I found out that this is the story, which you probably know so well already because you're regular. This is the story of the demigods and the demons. They strive. Later on we'll hear how they churn the ocean of milk. But that story is very nice because it shows the constant struggle between good and evil in this material world. Fortunately, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is not I would say, like the Christian philosophy, which only speaks of good and evil in terms of this material world, and then they can't really grasp the transcendental position of the Lord in many cases. Of course, there are saints who have great insight into the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth, even from the Christian tradition. But in general, in Christianity, we hear people speak of heaven and hell, generally, as the heaven being the place for the pious and hell being place for the impious living entities. Of course, there is something beyond heaven and hell, and we learn that, especially from the Vedic scriptures, which is the beauty of Krishna consciousness, because there's more to it than just heaven and hell. We're not eternally condemned to either hellish or heavenly existence, fortunately, because these places are still temporary places. Now, in this story of the demigods and the demons struggling against each other, there's a lot of lessons to be learned. And I was trying to figure out what is the lesson I can learn from this verse personally. I'll be honest with you, every time I come across a section in the Bhagavatam where there's prayers by some great personality, I become a little bit stifled because of the nature of basically, I have lack of taste when it comes to hearing the glories of the Lord. And also when I have to give class which speaks about the glories of the Lord, I find myself out of words, you know, because I haven't got much realization. When it comes to speaking about, for example, yes, material nature, three modes of nature, how they work, how people suffer, all these negative things, I'm very good at that. Very good analysis. But when it comes to saying something meaningful in glorification of the Supreme Lord, I'm dumbstruck completely. So anyhow, this purport, Prabhupada elucidates here in the purport about one aspect which I thought curious, and I was trying to figure out how to understand it. In the middle of the purport, Prabhupada says that the following sentence, I'll read it to you again. Okay, so the Supreme Lord is the controller of all the three gunas. Okay? And then he says, Lord Brahma, expressing his appreciation, said that because Lord Vishnu had now taken charge of the activities of goodness, there was every hope that the demigods would be successful in fulfilling their desires. Now, I was a bit puzzled at this point because I was wondering, well, why does he say now that Lord Vishnu has taken charge of the activities of goodness? So we were going back and forth, looking at different purports, reading all the verses in the chapter, peeping into the chapter following this. And I can't say that I'm 100% sure, but what I came up with as possible explanation is that in terms of what Prabhupada is saying here, that Krishna is in charge of all the three modes of nature. You see, he's the supreme controller. And then he manifests three different forms, or you could say there's three different expansions or incarnation. The three, they're called guna avatars, namely Lord Shiva, who is in charge of tamagun, Lord Brahma, who is in charge of rajagun, and finally Kshiradakshaya Vishnu, or Lord Vishnu, who is in charge of sattvagun. So the Lord is the overall controller of all the gunas, the three of them, but he manifests different forms to control the different modes. Modes can also be called moods. Sometimes Prabhupada calls them moods. So there's three different modes, and Lord Vishnu, in this particular incarnation, which is approached by Brahma at this particular moment on the shore of the Milk Ocean in Shvetadvip, he's the one who is in charge of the mode of goodness. And therefore, Brahma is saying, the demigods have very good chances of having their desires being fulfilled because they're approaching the one person who is in charge of the mode of goodness. And they themselves, the demigods, are predominantly under the influence of the mode of goodness. We know that there's three different planetary systems, and the higher planetary systems are predominantly in the mode of goodness. So that's why he's saying now. But what is important to understand is that it's a very interesting name that Lord Brahma is addressing Lord Vishnu with, and that's the name Anantaya. Prabhupada gives a little bit of elaboration on that. Anantaya, in the word for word, he translates as who are everlasting, transcending the three phases of time, past, present, and future. So that's a very beautiful name of Krishna, and we commonly know that many devotees have that name in various variations. Like, for example, Ananta Purushottam Prabhu, who is well known here. Then we have Ananta Shakti Prabhu. And all these names, they contain the word Ananta. Ananta, it's a Sanskrit word which the root of is anta. Does anyone know what anta mean? End, yes. Anta means end. I remember once in one temple in Sofia, we had a clock from India, and the clock said anta, the end. It should have said ananta. But anyhow, do you know that? Do you know that name? Ajanta. Is it Ajanta? Okay. Ajanta is also comprising Ananta. Anta. So Anta means end. And Krishna is Ananta, which means that he has no end. It's a beautiful name, Ananta. Ananta Rupam. Anadi Ananta Rupam. Krishna's form is endless, but it's also anadi, it's beginningless. So that's something that is very difficult for us to grasp, ananta. Because in our material experience, everything has got a beginning, middle, and an end. And in between, there's a lot of things going on. But that's the cycle which we can see regarding every object in this material world. Everything comes into being, then is being maintained and, you know, develops and gives some byproducts and stuff like that. Then it dwindles and it comes to the final stage when it disappears. So all these three different phases of, you could say, past, present and future, Krishna is the overall controller of all these, but he's beyond those changes. You see, the material energy has been controlling us through the modes of material nature for time immemorial. I mean, since we've entered into the material existence. Once we were with Vishnu in unmanifest state, and there's a lot of controversy whether we've probably been in the spiritual world. But anyway, the point is that when we entered into this material existence, then everything was put in motion by the modes of nature, and then we are under the constant influence of the cycle of samsara. Endlessly. I mean, it's practically, we cannot trace it back in the past, and we don't know how much time left we have in the future to stay in this world. It's in our hands to a certain extent, to a great extent, but we don't know. So material time is a very mysterious thing. And do you know what is actually time? What is it manifestation of, time? Okay, and more specifically, someone said Krishna. Glance of Krishna, okay, that's good. In one class, His Holiness Hanumat Preshak Goswami, who's a very scientific-minded person, he says that time is actually manifestation, is an external manifestation of Paramatma. So whatever you see that has the potency of time, and the potency of time is insurmountable. No one can overcome time. In the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna showed Arjuna the universal form, and at one point he told Arjuna, time I am, the destroyer of everything. So Krishna actually, in the form of time, he devours everything. And everyone surrenders to time. No one is able to stop the passage of time. There's so many speculations, so many people try to speak about being able to go in the past or in the future, you know, move around time. But even if someone manages to do that, even if someone succeed in going beyond this point of time, they're not going to be able to stop the passage of time. I mean, they will be subject to the passage of time, and even the greatest human beings, the greatest demigods, everyone has to have an end because they have a beginning. Speaking about material existence. And now, that's why Krishna, being Ananta, he's beyond the influence of time. In fact, he's the one who controls time. He's the one who controls the three modes of nature. And therefore, when it says here, there's a very interesting word here which I noticed. Lord Brahma, expressing his appreciation, said that because Lord Vishnu had now taken charge of the activities of goodness, there was every hope. Now, every hope means that it may or may not work out. Okay? Hope means, let's hope that it's going to be the way we want it. But there is a chance that it may go in a different way. So Lord Vishnu, in previous verses, Brahma prays to Lord Vishnu as being impartial and that's why it's very difficult to know how the Supreme Lord is going to act. Because you see, previously the demons were very powerful and the demigods were driven out from their position and they've become very poverty-stricken. That's the word Prabhupada's using. Poverty-stricken means they were bereft of all their opulence, all their heavenly opulence and wealth. And again, is that something that we can blame the Supreme Lord about? Because he's in control of everything. So you could say, well, Lord Shiva is in charge of Tamogun, but Lord Shiva is under the control of Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Gokul Nanda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So, yes, it is ultimately Krishna who is the one sanctioning anything and everything, controlling everything. And therefore, demigods are not certain. They're hoping that they'll be favored by the Lord because they are on his side. They're on the side of Sattva-guna. And he likes Sattva-guna. He likes things in mode of goodness. So that's why they're hoping. So like that, it's very difficult to know the plan of the Lord to such an extent that Prabhupada finishes the purport by saying, therefore the Lord is addressed here as Anantaya. All the Lord Brahma knows past, present and future. He is unable to understand the unlimited knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was very brilliantly illustrated in the story of Brahmavi Mohana Lila, where Lord Krishna manifests all these Vishnu forms to replace the stolen calves and boys, Krishna's friends, and Brahma was completely bewildered. Because Brahma knows past, present and future. Can you imagine if you had that knowledge of past, present and future? That means you're almost like omniscient, isn't it? You know everything. What else is there to be known in this world? You know everything that happened in the past. You're completely aware of what's going on in the present. And you know what's going to happen in the future. Well, but still, Brahma doesn't understand Krishna. He knows past, present and future. Because past, present and future only in the limits of this material existence. There is something beyond past, present and future. And that's Krishna. And that's what nobody understands. Even Lord Brahma. So, then, what is left for us? What can we know then? If Lord Brahma and the great rishis, the great demigods are completely bewildered and puzzled. Our hope is, well, the lesson I can learn from this section, from this story, is that in whatever condition of life we are, in happiness, in distress, whether things are working out the way we want them to work, sometimes they do, more rarely, more often things don't work the way we want them to work. But in whatever condition we are, we can always seek the protection of the Lord. Because He is beyond time. He is the one who controls everything. And that's exactly what the demigods are doing. They were completely in distress. They were completely puzzled, not knowing what to do. Where to go, what to do next. And then they went for protection to the Supreme Lord. So that's what we can do always. If we always seek shelter of the Supreme Lord in whatever condition we are, then we will always be on the safe side. Because we'll be acting according to the unknown, mysterious plan of the Supreme Lord. This is exactly what Arjuna did. You know, he wasn't sure what to do. He was quite perplexed. But then he decided, I will do as you order me, Krishna. and he was on the safe side. So for us to be on the safe side, we have to always try to seek the shelter of the Supreme Lord. And most of the time, no, actually, we will never be able to understand fully the plan of the Lord. You know that sometimes reverses in life seem very miserable and very difficult to digest. But ultimately, most of the times, ultimately, those reverses turn out to be something very positive. I can say that with my life. Recently, I had a very serious setback. I almost left my body. But I think that I've gained a lot from that, you know. I have come out more mature, more stable, more serious, I would say, and enriched in many ways. And in so many ways, spiritually, materially, emotionally, so many benefits. But when we were going through those difficulties, it was difficult to understand what's going on. You know, the immediate reaction is, why me? Why does it have to happen to me? Why do bad things happen to good people? Well, am I good really? I don't know, but that's a very common question. Why does it have to be me? What wrong have I done? Why? Why do you have to do anything wrong to go through difficulties? Why do we have to look at the difficulties as something negative? Difficulties are negative if we look at them that way. But if we understand that ultimately it's Krishna who is arranging all these events in our life, then we can sail smoothly through all the tribulations and come out victorious. So that's the lesson for me, at least, that we have to always try to seek shelter of Krishna. And now someone may ask, well, how can we seek the shelter of Krishna? Is there anything practical? Because we always come down to the practicality of the things. You know, you're speaking good words, speaking good philosophy, it's nice. But we always like to come to a conclusion, a conclusive end of what's being spoken, which gives us the tools, something practical, something tangible, something you can grasp and use in our own life. Well, Prabhupada explains in his books in various ways how we can actually take shelter of Krishna. But the most potent way that I've seen of taking shelter of Krishna is to actually study Krishna's instructions and follow them. That's what we can grasp to. Krishna's instructions, the instructions of his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada's books give us ample opportunities to actually be connected with the Supreme Lord, take the side of the Supreme Lord. So studying Srila Prabhupada's books in the association of Vaishnavas is our only shelter, really. There's no other shelter for us. Srimad Bhagavatam, that's what Krishna left behind. So we have to be serious in our study. And that's why it's so nice that the temple give the opportunity to Vaishnavas to come along together and study, try to understand, discuss these wonderful teachings that Krishna has given us. And that's what I think is the practical application of what's being spoken here. And we can see there are devotees who are in a position of leaders. And we have to take shelter of them, just like the demigods. They went and took shelter of Brahma. And he is the Pitamaha. He's the father of all the demigods. And he's the one, if anyone is to understand Krishna, is to be able to understand Krishna, that's him. because he is the supreme peace beyond, he's actually beyond the demigods. It says in one of the purports here that he is above the demigods. Demigods are in Svargaloka, he is in Satyaloka, he is in the highest planet, which is above Svarga. Brahma is not actually influenced by time the same way the demigods are, in the sense that he lives throughout the entire creation, whereas everyone else goes up and down, like rotates. So he's in a much steadier position. He's a very special personality. We have to offer our homage to him as the founder of our Sampradaya also. See, all the knowledge that we received, it comes from Brahma. We come in his line of disciplic succession. And likewise, among the community of devotees that we are participating in, you will find that there are some little Brahmas, leaders, little representatives of Lord Brahma, and we have to seek their shelter and ask them to teach us and help us approach the Supreme Lord. That's, and you can study Prabhupada's books to find out who are those people. It takes note, it says in English, it takes one to know one, means that we have to be advanced ourselves to understand who is advanced. But there are certain symptoms that Prabhupada gives in his books to understand who is a advanced Vaishnava, and we have to seek their shelter. And with their help, try to understand something, little bit about Krishna, and how he acts, which is, again, inconceivable, anantaya. We cannot understand Krishna. Okay, so that's all I had to say. If you have any comments or any questions, you're most welcome for the remaining time.